You are listening to the podcast That's Life in Sweden, or as we say in Swedish, Sånt är livet i Sverige, with me, your host, Lisa Orsimäki. The work of teachers matters, whether in Sweden or in any other country in the world. Teaching is complex, it requires leadership skills, passion, and above all, a commitment to student learning. In today's English episode, I have invited Mia Smith, who in 2020 received the prestigious prize for teaching excellence from the Royal Swedish Academy of Letters, or as it is called in Swedish, Vitterhetsakademin, about her work as a head teacher at a school in Partille in Gothenburg here in Sweden. Hello, Mia, and welcome. How are you?
Good morning. I'm fine, thank you.
Yes, it is a good morning.
It is indeed.
Yes, and you're starting your holidays on Monday.
Yes, I do. Finally, a week of relaxing.
Yes.
Well worth.
Yes, and you going where?
I'm going to Copenhagen for a few days with my son just to relax and leave the country for the first time in 2 years.
Oh, yes. And of course, all the restrictions have now lifted here in Sweden. In fact, all of the Nordic countries.
Yes, exactly. So we can finally leave the country for a few days.
Yes. So, Mia, can you share with us why you chose to become a teacher and how long you have worked as a teacher?
Well, I'm one of those people, I was very sure I was not going to be a teacher since my mother was in teaching, and I just knew that that was what I was not going to do. But I ended up working as a substitute teacher at the age of 19, and you know, one thing led to another. All of a sudden you see that magic that When you do something, you realize you can change the life of a teenager and push them in the right direction. I just happened to be there and see those things, and I started realizing that these kids think I'm doing something right. And since I've always been really fascinated with different languages, I've studied quite a lot of languages, and that's sort of what can you do based on languages. You can basically be a translator, an interpreter, or a teacher. And all of a sudden, I was becoming a teacher. I'm not really sure how that happened. But I've been working for 16 years now, and I feel like I've found my spot somehow. I teach mainly years 7 to 9, which means they're 13 to 16 years old. But I do sometimes get year 6 students in German, because they start learning their third language in year 6 when they're about 12, or maybe only 11 once they start. But then I leave them when they're about 16, where they go on to another school system.
Right. So that's when they go to this gymnasium or the secondary school.
Exactly.
Yeah, exactly.
And that's where they choose what to do. So I think these ages are the most interesting, because when I meet these students for the first time, they are basically large children, where I have to teach them that we use their breaks to go to the bathroom, not our classes and so on. And once they leave, they are young adults with their, you know, their eyes set on, their mind is set on something, what they want to work with in the future, and where they're going to end up in the future. So that journey, I mean, those years are just fantastic to see the development of these characters from basically children to young adults. It's a very, very magical age to be a part of these teenagers' lives.
So you work as a head teacher or förstelärare here in Sweden, and it is a role that it was implemented in 2014. Can you explain the reason for its implementation, and what does the work entail or involve?
Well, basically, we have a situation where the really, really good teachers are the ones who leave the classroom. They go on to become, headmasters or researchers or other things like that, and they sort of leave the classroom. And this reform was created to make sure to keep the really good teachers in the classroom, and in that way improve the quality of education, and thus improving the results of Swedish education. So that's a way to give these teachers a career possibility to sort of make a career but still stay in the classroom. So there are very strict rules that you have to have at least half of your work hours in as a teacher, not going away from the classroom to do other things instead, which I think is a very important point of this reform. Sort of we want to get the really, really good teachers, make them stay, make them even better, make them share what they're doing, but still keep them in the classroom. What happens, though, is that it's extremely different how this is interpreted in different schools. I have had colleagues who've had a full day off to do things where they support other teachers or help them develop their work and so on. Mm. But in today, most of us do not have any time whatsoever to do anything. So I have this title, but I don't really have any time to do something special. If it is decided that I'm going to do something, they will give me time, just like a few hours or so, whatever is needed for that little project. But I am in a group where I sit with my headmistress and the other head teachers and discuss how we're going to continue working in our school to develop different processes that we see necessary for us to take the next step into improving our school and the education and quality of the education at our school. But it is very, very different. And there are head teachers who get sort of, they become head teachers in their subject. I am not a head teacher of English and German. I'm just a head teacher. And then I happen to teach English and German. That's just another thing in it. But it's really different how different schools or municipalities have chosen to interpret this.
Mm-hmm. Mm. But it sounds like, the way you described it, it sounds like a leadership role.
In a way, yes, but not that clearly. This has been quite a bit of a discussion. Is it a leadership role or not? And I have been very much asking for training in how to be a leader for my colleagues. I mean, I am a leader in the classroom, that is no doubt. But leading conversations with my colleagues is another thing. It's another thing to be a leader for your fellow teachers. And that's something where I have been asking a lot to get training, and I am doing that right now, getting some training on how to sort of lead those conversations, helping my colleagues advance in their thinking as well. So I mean, leading in the classroom and leading your colleagues, they're two different processes, I would believe.
Okay, so what do you think is a good leader?
I try to focus on not telling people anything, but rather leading a conversation. I think my biggest, I'm not sure if it's a blessing or a curse, I really can't be quiet. If people start talking about something, I get involved. I really can't stop talking. And I try to sort of not tell people this is the truth, but rather ask them, like, why do you think like this? What would happen if you do this? And how can we go on thinking more like having a conversation than just giving people orders? And I think that's the most important thing. Just as we do with our students, we ask them questions and sort of to make them on their own discover which road they're going on, not only telling them this is the truth, learn this, but I want to make them realize on their own and think on their own. And I think being in conversations with colleagues, and for me, I must say, when I talk about my colleagues, it's not only the teachers at my school. I spend a lot of time having conversations, for example, online, in Facebook groups with other teachers, on Twitter, in different like forums, in conferences and so on, and meeting teachers. So when I talk about my colleagues, I'm not only talking about the ones in my school, but other teachers as well. And for me, that's sort of how you grow. By communicating with someone else makes you take that one more step in your mind on your road to becoming an even better teacher. No, learning from someone else's experience can help you take one more step. Having someone ask you, have you really thought about this? Is that what is the reason why you're doing this?
Mm-hmm. And of course, being a teacher is a continuous evolving process. It's not something, right, today I'm a teacher and that's it. I don't need to learn anymore.
Exactly. I still have, during my entire career, I've had a quote in a frame on my desk by the Nobel Prize laureate, Rabindranath Tagore from India, which is about like a good teacher sees his subject as something still burning. It's like a fire that's still burning. The teacher who merely passes on dead objects to his students is no longer a good teacher. And I keep that quote on my desk as a constant reminder that I need to sort of really want to learn. I need to want to learn more things and get to dig into deeper into my subject to find it interesting. If I one day find my subject boring, my students will immediately notice and they will lose interest. So, I mean, I need to really, really constantly evolve and learn and continue having this passionate relationship with my subject and also with the matter of teaching itself.
Absolutely. Now, you said it. Have you shared that with other teachers you've been in contact with, and what have their reaction been?
Not exactly like that. I think I mentioned it a few times, but I think this is sort of the teachers who choose to enter these discussions online, for example, they do so because they are on that path. They know that they need this constant discussion to keep moving.
Your teaching areas include English and German. Can you share why you have chosen to teach in these languages?
I seldom present myself as a German teacher, English teacher. I present myself as a language teacher because it could have been basically any language. I just love languages. I've always done so. And I mean, I have actually taught Swedish, English, German, French and Spanish for short periods. But I have learned several languages, and I try to convey to my students that if you have chosen to study French or Spanish, I do not think that that is worse than German just because German is my language. I do appreciate those languages as well. I try to communicate with my students in French and Spanish too, to really show them that learning languages is a joy and it opens a door to the world. I try to share with my students situations where speaking another language, even if it's just a little bit, has given me more joy and opened doors and given me experiences that have made my life richer in any way. So the fact that it turned out to be German and English was basically, well, I think English is a really good platform because that's something like everyone teaches. Teaching two modern languages would be really hard to get a good position here in Sweden. But the fact that it was German, not French or Spanish, was basically because that was the language I started learning first.
And what about Danish? How different is Danish from Swedish?
It is actually taught as a modern language in some parts of Sweden, the very south. I would say not all Swedish people would understand it, but it's sort of a mindset, and it's about strategies. And those of us who are interested in learning languages, for me, reading Danish is not really a problem. Understanding spoken Danish can be trickier because of the pronunciation. But I think with a correct mindset, you will manage.
Yes. Well, I'm just thinking that every time I've been to Denmark, I'd rather speak English, or then I just say, can we speak Finnish?
Yeah, it is tricky, but I mean, there has been research as well, like within the Scandinavian countries, how much we do understand each other, and it is different sort of in different areas. And it's also sort of a mindset bit, I think. I'm the kind of person who constantly tries to learn new languages. I was just sitting here with my Italian lesson in my app, in my phone. And if you have that mindset, wanting to learn, wanting to understand, using all your strategies to understand, I mean, that helps me quite a lot. And I am the kind of person who will go into a store and try to speak Danish just for the sake of seeing if I can do it. Not everyone is like that.
Yeah. And you know what? You are met in a different way from people, you know, from the Danes. If you try to speak Danish, suddenly they are more helpful. They're smiling. And then it doesn't matter if you decide to try out in English, because you cannot find the word in Danish.
And that's true for all countries, I think. If you do make an effort to learn a few words, a few phrases, people will smile at you. I had a few students a couple of weeks ago who we were starting to discuss different languages, and they taught me two words in Turkish for you and me, ben sen. And then the next time I saw them and I pointed, I said ben sen, and I got this huge smile, like, wow, you made the effort to learn just a few words in my native language. And I mean, making just that little effort, trying to learn something and show people that I am interested in you, in your background, in your culture, I'm willing to make that effort, that really opens doors.
The importance of relationship building, and it takes so little.
And I think that's the importance of learning languages, because it is in fact, I mean, it's in fact a way of sort of, they say, if in the long run, preventing wars. I mean, you do not fight with the people you played with as children. If you can communicate with someone, you learn about their culture as well. And that really makes it harder to fight with someone. Mm. I think learning languages is more important than some people realize. I mean, the European Union has a goal set that every person living in the European Union should be able to communicate in their own native languages plus two more. In Sweden, we do not live up to that. Swedish people are amazing at speaking English, but when it comes to a third language, very, very many lose that quickly after school because they do not use it at all. And if we go to other parts of Europe, if you go to the Balkans, for example, you will see that many, many, many people speak several languages. They learn their neighboring languages and can, without problem, communicate in 3, 4, 5 languages. That is something we need to understand in Sweden as well, that learning a language is not only about grades in school. English is not enough. Learning languages as a thing itself helps you understand the world, helps you understand the world of other people, and leads to greater understanding in the world.
You are so right. You know, I'm just thinking about the Finns. You know, the Finns and Swedish. We used to be one major country in the whole area. Sweden and Finland were not separate from each other.
No.
And I never understood how on earth did they understand each other.
I mean, Finnish is indeed a very difficult language to learn for Swedish people. And I think that's sort of why it hasn't really been a thing that people learn anything about. And it's really, really sad, because it's something to really care about. I mean, my own vocabulary in Finnish is very, very limited as well. Tervetuloa.
Kiitos. Kiitos paljon. Oh, well. You have also an interest in digitalization or IT. What role do you think digitalization has and will have in teaching and learning? Do you think the way we teach currently will change? If so, how?
I think my interest is more about keeping up to date with what's happening in the world. And the world around us is turning more and more digital. Mm. For me, it's about, I mean, the job I have is to prepare my students for the future that they are to live in. My constant goal is that my students need to be able to exist in the world that will face them when they exit our school. Hopefully they study 3 more years, but then what's happening? They need to be ready for that world. And that world will include lots of digital devices. That many things will be done using digital tools, and what we need to do in school is to make sure that they're ready for that world and adapt to what they are going into. We have been discussing a lot lately sort of the kind of texts we work with at school. In Swedish school, we have so many situations where the students are asked to write a letter. Hmm. How many 16-year-olds today write a letter to someone? They do not, but still we have that as a constant test situation. Write a letter or write a postcard. Our students do not know what postcards look like. But I think we need to talk about how to write an email, sort of, yes. Rather that part, sort of the fact that you need to start with hello and you need to write your name at the end and small things like that, really. Mm. To focus on, but because I try to focus on the skills that the students need to have. I talked a lot to my students about the difference between a search engine and a web browser, for example. They don't really know the difference. They don't know these words, how to search online to find the information they want to have, not just to click on the first link, but look at the results page, which different kinds of pages can we use, and what is the good and the bad sides to each of these, what is a top level domain, and so on. As an English teacher, I also try to focus on the fact that when my students go online, not all of them are fluent in English. If they only set up for Wikipedia, the language is so difficult that they might not understand what it says. So I try to sort of teach them how to find easier websites like Wikipedia Simple English or National Geographic Kids and so on, and sort of learning the balance between understanding the language and make sure it's not too oversimplified to remove important information. This kind of thing, these digital skills is what the students need to have in their minds before they move on, because we need to make sure that our students are ready to learn more when they go out of the classroom, when they go home and sit on the computer and look for things, that they then have the skills necessary to understand what is in them, you know, at the grasp of they just with the beyond the keyboard. What do they find and understand what's there? How do they find the correct information? How do they know if they're trying to be fooled or not? This kind of sort of everyday things. And we cannot tell our students never to use Google Translate, because they will. Instead, we need to talk about how and when to use Google Translate, what to be careful about, and when it's a really good thing.
Yes, so what you're actually talking about is digital literacy skills.
Yes, because that is what our students do. We tend to give them laptops or iPads or Chromebooks, and then we say, okay, the kids today are really good at using computers. And then we just leave them at that. And then you realize that they don't really know what's happening, like how to use them for things that we need them to do. And I think that's really, really interesting when it comes to the pandemic, what's happening here when we've been thrown out into online teaching. We had online teaching for a couple of months last year, and now in January we had to send home just a couple of classes for a few days because we had a sort of a spreading situation in a few of our classes. And then we had our year sevens. They were never home last year, and all of a sudden they had to go from home, and then you realize what they haven't learned. And I kept telling them online over Meet here that now in classroom you have a classroom task, and I want you to make a copy of this document, and half the class do not know how to do that.
Wow.
And also I really can't see what the students are doing, because they do not know how to sort of create a document in the task and so on. Basic skills that no one really has thought about needing to teach them.
Yes.
We assume that the students are digital literate, and we need to check what they actually know, and we need to teach them what they need to know and not just assume that they know everything.
That brings me to the next question, which relates to the pandemic, which has, I believe, been a catalyst for us as educators at all levels to rethink or reimagine teaching and learning. But there is a great deal of resistance to new ways of teaching and learning. Do you have any ideas why this is so and what to do about it?
I must say, from what I've seen, the resistance is going away in a bit. I think that what's happened during the pandemic is that those who were the most hesitant to bring in computers into the classroom, they have been forced to take a huge leap and catch up with the rest of the big group. I mean, there are still a few teachers who are sort of ahead, leading and showing others different ways of working with it. But those who are sort of not very comfortable, who stay behind a bit, doing the least possible, but still maybe a little bit, the ones who were really behind are catching up with a big group of teachers here. And I think what we need to work on is sort of transparency, showing the students what needs to be done and what does not need to be done. What's happening right now is that we have had quite a lot of students quarantined, stuck at home in their houses. They're not sick, but they cannot go to school because someone in their family has COVID and so on.
Yeah.
And sort of the way of communicating what can be done from home, what cannot be done from home. But there's also a balance here, because okay, if my class is working on some grammar, we're looking at how to use adverbs in English. Yes, there are millions of websites with online tasks on how to do so. But then again, many of those sites you cannot use because of the regulations of submitting student names and so on. You have these restrictive regulations. But okay, there are lots of websites. I can throw them links to websites where they can practice, but I might not be able to follow it up. But then again, I know as a teacher that if I give them just these online links, the students will not learn as efficiently. They will not focus enough on what they're doing. If I give them a paper instead, I know that they will focus more. We see that sort of balance between using the new tools for modern innovative learning and sort of leaning back and thinking what is best for my students at this point. And sometimes you come to a situation where you have to say, okay, I would like to do this, but in this situation, I have to do something else because it doesn't really work that way. But what I see is also that we tend to sort of go back and say, hey, stop now. That is extremely modern. We see a lot of gamified learning, which is sort of to the ridiculous point. I entered a class a while ago for a colleague and entered some kind of game where I know these words and phrases in French, but I do not get enough points because I haven't figured out that I need to build it by a defense tower and put it in the correct crossway, and the dinosaur gives me more points than the crocodile. And in that situation, it's more like, what am I doing? Am I sort of repeating my French vocabulary items, or am I so focused on gamification that we lose sight of what is important here? And that constant balance, because we need to try these new things. And sometimes we need to back and say, nope, that was no good, or yes, this was great. And sort of finding the balance of what and when and how much, to what extent, and sort of, do we need to go for new things every week, or do we need to find good things and repeat them so the students get to know them?
The point I'm trying to figure out is, how do you support educators or teachers?
That is really, really hard, and we need to have those points of getting their support. But what the problem is also that sometimes I've been out lecturing and giving workshops a lot for teachers around the country, focused on sort of the digital competence within the language area. And I've talked about sort of digital tools within the language classroom. And sometimes you see that some teachers are so far behind that they're not really ready to take it in. But maybe you sort of plant a seed and they start thinking, and maybe a year later they will go to their colleague and say, hey, I heard about this website. Remember you used that. Could you show me again? And maybe that then they're ready. But I also, because I've showed teachers like, okay, let's try this tool. And they would start playing and they go crazy. And then I tell them, yes, this is a tool that I have chosen not to use with my students because I think it's too much about gamification. Because sometimes I hear, because many people know that I'm quite a digital teacher. I work a lot with digital competence and digital tools. But also my students need to bring a pencil to class. We also write on paper. We also read books on paper. And it's not all about using only digital tools. They are not instead of what we did before. We need to sort of focus on what we do, when, and why.
Now that's good teaching.
That's a constant question, but it's also sometimes digital tools will help us a lot. I have lost several students with sort of reading difficulties. When we read a book, I mean, it's wonderful if I find that book in a way that the students can listen to it, and these students will both read and listen at the same time to get to that sort of. To get to the point that maximizes their learning. And that's something that we maybe didn't have when I went to school and so on. So, I mean, it facilitates learning for those who really need it. But then again, we also have the debate about should all students be allowed to listen to books instead of reading, which makes students not practice reading, which leads to students who do not read and cannot read on a level high enough, for example, for university education. So, I mean, we do have a problem here, sort of not going too far, but holding back. You need to stop and think about what is important and why do we do things.
Wow. Considering the lack of qualified teachers here in Sweden, what do you think should be done to attract more teachers to the profession?
That is the hugest problem we have right now. And I think we need to listen to the teachers when we talk about solutions. One problem is that everything in the media is about how horrible it is to be a teacher today. There's lots and lots of you know, articles about the big problem with the Swedish school system. We need to talk about the great things as well, the wonderful students and the interactions and everything that's so great. But we do need to talk about the working conditions, because what's happening now is that for every year I've been teaching, they increase the number of minutes we stay in the classroom with students. We tend to get more and more students, larger classes and more classes to teach, to sort of compensate for not having enough colleagues. But that makes teachers leave the vocation and people choose not to be teachers anymore. And that is a huge problem. We cannot solve the crisis by forcing the teachers who are still there to teach more. We will not manage that. So, I mean, we need better working conditions. We need to have sort of a restricted amount of time in the classroom. We need to have a restricted amount of students we meet. I mean, it's a huge difference if we have 25 or 30 students in the classroom. And I know there's research saying that's not the most important issue. But for me as a teacher, it is a huge deal. It affects a lot how I feel when leaving the classroom, how stressed I am, my feeling of have I been able to help everyone in the classroom who needs my help and so on. Mm-hmm. So for me, that is a big deal. And that's something we need to talk about. If we want to not only get more teachers into the profession, we need to keep the ones we have. And then we need to make sure that their working conditions are better. There's also a lot of talk about the money, because the pay of teachers, it has gone up quite considerably. But then again, if we have an engineer who's considering becoming a math teacher, well, they will lose a ridiculous amount of money by switching to becoming a teacher.
Absolutely.
That is something like it's better today if you, when you leave school, to go straight to the supermarket, start working there every year until you retire, then you make more money than if you go to university, become a teacher and work as a teacher.
And you still have to pay off your loan.
Yes. And I mean, it's really sort of, we need to see that getting an education and sort of putting yourself out there for your country, you need to earn something from it. You cannot lose from doing so. But we need to look out for our teachers, make sure that they want to stay teachers as well.
And this, of course, relates to the status, or teacher
Very
status
much.
And how we can raise the status. And like you mentioned just before, social media, the media doesn't help.
No. I mean, it's really, we need to talk about that, but we also need to make sure that teachers are looked at as someone who knows something. There's a constant, you know, joking in social media is about how you used to ask the student, like, you got an F, what did you do? And now you turn to the teacher and said, he's got an F, what did you do? That we need to make sure that it's not always the teacher's fault if something doesn't end up the way we hoped it would. The responsibility on the teacher's shoulders today is ridiculous, and we need to sort of make sure to get the parents on our side as well, to focus on sort of, yes, what we do is enough, and we need to your help as well. But that's also through media, the image of the profession that is portrayed in media. We need media to lift us up and show that we know what we're doing, and to trust that the teachers know what they're doing. With the digital media, there are issues arising, you know, with students filming teachers, putting it online and so on, which is really, really ridiculous. There have been cases recently of a parent releasing a film that the student had filmed his teacher and so on. And many teachers reacted to the fact that the teacher was not the one who did made a mistake here. It was actually the parent who wanted to release this video of the child filming the teacher, sort of. Who is in charge? We need to get sort of people to trust that the teachers know what they're doing.
And that's, of course, a parental responsibility, and I thought there's something called copyright.
Also media, but the media is also responsible for helping us get this image through.
Right. So what would you do? I mean, what suggestions do you have in order to, I suppose, connecting with parents and, you know, what should be done about that? How do you work with parents?
Well, a lot of it is, of course, digital today. We communicate a lot through learning platforms and so on, emails, phone calls, very different in different cases, I would say, and that's sort of something that needs to be. In some cases, you need to have very close contact with some parents, and sometimes you do not need to. But it's really, really, it's an issue, and it takes up a lot of time that could be used to other things as well. And that is also a great debate in Sweden today. Should that be the teachers? Some schools are trying to have sort of group mentors who do not teach, but do only have this contact with the parents and take care of the social situation around the students as well, as a way of relieving the teachers so the teachers can focus on only teaching. And there are teachers on both sides here, because some of us think that is this role of mentoring is also a very important part of the profession. And some feel that they would really be happy never to be a mentor, never to have to talk to a parent ever again, because that's not what they why they became a teacher. They're focused on the relationship with a student. And that's something to really, it's a balance. And there are lots and lots of different projects going on, trying out different methods to get around this. Wow. But I mean, all those hours spent sitting down. When I was in school, we called it a quarterly talk, kvartsamtal, because you had your 15 minutes. Teacher, student, parents, 15 minutes. Today, I mean, I'm lucky if 30 minutes is enough.
Wow.
It's a lot longer. Like, everything takes longer, and there's more, and the more parts into what we talk about. And that takes time away from my students, from planning my lessons, from, you know, commenting on their essays or whatever needs to be done. It is complex. And I must say, I do, to some points, you know, appreciate this contact with parents and the mentoring part of the job as well. But it is a very complex situation. And if we have this shortage of teachers, we might need to think about giving that part away to other groups of staff in school who can do that, so we can focus on actually teaching.
Mia, is there an issue that you are especially interested in sharing that I have not brought up? I know you are part of you are a chair of a
the Swedish Language Teachers Association.
That's it. Tell us
yes,
about it.
Yes, it's an organization for language teachers around the country, and I hope that by, you know, airing this in Sweden, we will get even more members. We work strongly for sort of advocating our rights as language teachers, supporting with, you know, lectures and things that would help our teachers grow as in their profession. We have a magazine that comes out 4 times a year and so on. But we also work, for example, with Skolverket. When they have new propositions on things to change, we get to give them feedback and sit down in conversations and different things. It is very, very important to have a chance to push for your specific group of teachers. We do have a problem in Sweden that modern languages is today the only subject that you can choose not to study.
Oh, really?
That is, I mean, it's the one subject that is easily removed. In many cases, too easily is a great debate among language teachers. Should you be able to remove it just because you're lazy? Or should it only be removed if you really have issues in learning Swedish or English and so on? And we see great struggles for our language teachers. For example, they have looked into the way to get more training. We need to constantly keep our skills up to date, right? My German skills will not, if I just speak German in the classroom, I will lose my ability to speak German. I need to go to Germany every now and then to speak German. And very, very, very few teachers get a chance to actually travel to other countries to keep their language skills up to date and get teacher training and so on. Through the European Union, there are lots of projects, and I think that's more or less the only way to get around. But that is something we look at. So we hope that loads of teachers are going to our conference here in Uppsala this spring to hear lectures in French, in Spanish, in German about teaching French, German, Spanish, English, and so on, to really get that boost of hearing the language on an advanced level and getting ideas on how to advance your teaching even more, because that is really an issue for us teachers, language teachers, not being able to get any sort of further education in countries where the language is spoken, or at all in the language spoken. We often get only lectures in Swedish about teaching, and we need that in our modern languages as well. English is not an issue that badly, because English is very much present in Swedish society today. We hear English every single day. German, French, and Spanish, not so much. We need to more actively work on getting that into our heads in different situations. So, I mean, that is an issue as well.
And you will, of course, send me the link or to that, and I will put it on the actual.
Gladly.
Yes, you make sure to do that. Thank you so much, Mia, for sharing your thoughts. And take care, and take care of yourself. Enjoy Copenhagen.
Thank you very much. Thank you for this conversation.
And you have been listening to the podcast Sånt är livet i Sverige, or in English, That's Life here in Sweden, with me, Lisa Orsimäki. Till next time, take care of yourself and each other. Bye for now.